Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and earned a liberal arts degree at Lake Forest College and a master's in landscape architecture from the University of Michigan. He is a world-class golf course designer, and he believes that the key to great golf course design is to provide for variety in length, direction, angle of approach, and hazards, and to do so with a proliferation of options available to the golfer according to his golf ability, both mentally and physically. His name, Mike DeVries. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to the best golf course architect you probably have never heard of, Mike DeVries. Mike, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thanks, Jack. It's good to be with you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood, growing up in Grand Rapids, and your mom and your dad, please?
Yeah, so I was born in Saginaw, but grew up and we moved shortly to Grand Rapids thereafter. And I was the middle child, of course, older brother and a younger sister. And my dad was a social worker, and I was very fortunate. I knew all my grandparents on both sides, and one of those happened to be a golfer, and that's what got me into golf.
What's the biggest thing, Mike, you learned from Dad? And what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom?
Well, combination, I think, from both of them is to always do your best, your absolute best. You know, there's no reason not to try, you know, to do what you can possibly do, no matter what it is. It could be a simple menial task or the greatest project that you have, but you always have to work your hardest. I think individually, my dad was, he was being a social worker. He's a real compassionate guy and had a fairly wide view of the world. You know, there are a lot of people that need help and things like that. My mom, she got everything done. You know, she ran the household. She took care of things. And they were a great team. That's pretty special.
How did you spend your time as a kid? What did you like to do?
Any sport. I loved to play, you know, sports. I was always a really good student. I was very dedicated to that. You know, I think that comes from that, you know, do your best. So I was probably a little hard on myself in that regard. But I was a good student, and you know, I had good friends. And when we grew up, we did everything. You know, we went to the park, we played ball, whether that was football, tag football, baseball, basketball. You know, we did everything, backyard hockey, whatever it was. We were always active, and you know, lots of good friends.
We're talking to Mike DeVries, one of the world's best golf course architects. Mike, how many toy bulldozers did you have as a kid?
Not enough. But, yeah, I had the usual Tonka toys, you know, imagining building stuff and things like that. And that was, you know, it's part of childhood, I guess, you know, making mud pies and building dams. And we lived on – our street was on a hill. So, you know, when it started raining, you went out in your rain suit and your galoshes and you dam up the curb and see how much water you could hold until it blew open and then it went rushing down the street.
During the summer, your family spent the time in Frankfurt, right by Crystal Downs. As a young kid, did you start out as an assistant head pro? What's the first job you had at Crystal Downs?
No, I was in the bag room. Back then we didn't have caddies. Everybody took a golf cart. There were only four guys that actually walked the golf course back then, and they were all 75 or older. And, Everybody else took a golf cart. And so, you know, it was a big deal to, like, you know, work in the pro shop or in the bag room, get people's bags, you know, greet people. You got to know all the members, and a lot of opportunity to mingle and to interact with people and learn how to look them in the eye, shake their hand, say hello, how are you doing today, all that kind of stuff. Pretty great. Working for Fred Muller, the old pro that was there, just retired a couple of years ago, but a great guy.
What did working in the bag room at Crystal Downs teach you about being a golf course architect?
Well, first of all, it taught you that attention to all those people, the detail, things that you had to do like you do in any job. So, you know, you got to be there on time. You have to, you know, do all that kind of stuff. But then in the afternoons, we would go out, all the bagroom staff, the pro, the assistant pro, we'd go out and play golf. And you know, I had this hand-me-down set of clubs, and, you know, they laughed when they saw me swing this junior driver that I had that didn't really fit me. And shortly thereafter, we went in, and Fred pulled out a set of old McGregor MT irons from the 50s, and he said, "Here, play these for a while." And I played them for 10 years.
After college at Lake Forest, you apprenticed with golf architect Tom Doak. Talk about that experience.
It was really awesome. Tom was doing his first golf course, High Point Golf Club, up in east of Traverse City, and I had finished undergrad and did something else and figured out that wasn't really what I wanted to do, and was getting married. In the process, went back up and worked on the golf course again at Crystal Downs, and just kept going back to golf. And so found out that Tom was building his golf course over there, got introduced to him, went and visited, spent the day, learned about that, and then came back after camping with my wife for our honeymoon and worked with Tom for about 2.5 years. And every day we were talking about golf shots, this angle, that angle, what we were trying to do, what the composite of everything that we were trying to build there was. And that's, Tom's a brilliant guy, and it's really exciting. You know, it was a great, great experience, and course of my life, I learned a lot.
We're talking to Mike DeVries, who then went to University of Michigan, got a master's in landscape architecture, and then he went to work with Tom Fazio for a year and a half. When we come back, we'll ask him about Tom Fazio. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Mike DeVries, who's currently restoring the 100-plus-year-old Bloomfield Hills Country Club on Long Lake Road. Tom Fazio, what'd you learn from him?
Tom's a great man. He's everything that he was always trying to do had to, you know, it was the best. How can we do the absolute best for this project? And he was always focused on that. And an amazing guy where he was in, this is the mid-90s when I worked for him, and he was in high demand. Was doing super high profile projects. And with that comes a lot of times a number of people that, you know, want to hang out and follow you around while you're working, or a big group of people when they do a presentation. And Tom was always very comfortable. You know, he could walk into a room of 100 people and talk about the golf course and be very detailed. And then we could go out on the golf course and actually do work. And he would talk with the 10 people that were walking around with us and do the work while we were doing it, or one-on-one. He was amazing that way too. You know, he always made me feel very comfortable offering an idea, concept, ask questions. And it was a very positive way to contribute to what we were trying to do. It wasn't just do this, do that. You know, it wasn't just following him. He was always really receptive. And I think, you know, that's why he has really good projects. And that's why he's had a lot of people that have worked with him for a number of years and continue to produce great work.
You belong to a very select group of architects in the world. What do all great golf course architects have in common, Mike DeVries?
Well, I think they have a vision. They have an artistic vision that they bring to it. And that's different for all of them. Some of them look at that as, I'm going to create something. I'm going to move dirt. I'm going to take this old mining site or whatever, and I'm going to create a beautiful landscape out of it. Others look at a beautiful oceanside dunes project, and they take that and they integrate golf into that environment. But they have a vision. They have a vision of what that landscape can be and how it can be used for golf. And that leads to varied things. That's the great thing about golf. It's not a tennis court, nothing against tennis, but it's not, you know, it's not X by X with a 3-foot net. And every golf course is different. Even if you're trying to emulate a hole at the old course, say, for instance, like the Road Hole or the Eden Hole, which is the 11th, which is the par 3 at the end of the site there. Those holes are copied regularly by people or are emulated by designers frequently. And that that's a high compliment, but it's also, how does that designer think about each of those things or that iteration and how that works on the piece of property that they're working with?
It's generally recognized that the greatest golf course designer of all time was a Scotsman born in 1870, died in 1934, Alistair McKenzie. Why was he the GOAT?
Well, I think he had this amazing ability to see a site. He also worked with, he also had some great sites to work with, but he had the ability to see a site, figure out what that site needed, route the golf course in a way. And then most frequently, he usually taught a local person there what he wanted and how to execute that in a very short period of time, which is pretty amazing. He did that at Royal Melbourne, where he was only in Australia for 3 months. And Royal Melbourne is one of the greatest golf courses in the world. At Cypress Point, he was nearby there, but he was more involved. At Crystal Downs, he had Perry Maxwell, who was his associate in the Midwest. And he, sort of parlayed what he wanted done there. And Perry Maxwell on his own was a great architect also. But he was able to sort of bring out the best in all the sites that he had, I think, and created great interest and stuff. He has four of the top golf courses in the world with Augusta National, Cypress Point, Royal Melbourne, Crystal Downs.
Okay, in 1994, you decide, I'm going to start my own golf course architectural company, DeVries Designs. What did Annie's mom and dad say to you?
Well, my father-in-law, Bob, is an attorney, so he wrote my papers up. they're great. They're very supportive. They knew that, you know, we were working hard and that, you know, it was ultimately going to work out. And, we'd already done a bunch of stuff. We'd already had the opportunity of working under Tom Doak to travel. We lived in Myrtle Beach. We did a bunch of other stuff that was pretty exciting, you know, for a young married couple. So I think they've been very supportive and excited about it. And they're not really golfers. So that says something right there. They're great, great people.
When you need heart surgery, you don't want the surgeon to say, You're my first patient, okay? When you go and say, you know, I'm DeVries Designs, Inc., but I've never designed a course or renovated a course, How did you win your first few projects?
Well, you meet people and they see the work that you've done maybe for Tom Doak or Tom Fazio. They have a need and they see that you understand, you know, you just through the interview process, they understand that you know what you're talking about and they like what you're talking about. They like the concept there. And then you got to produce. If you don't produce, it's going to be a long road. But I've been really very fortunate with all the clients that I've had, you know, the major beginnings with Pilgrim's Run and Kingsley, which Pilgrim's Run was with a bunch of people. Kingsley Club was, was primarily mine. Fred Muller, you know, helped assist on that. And my two owners, Ed Walker and Art Preston, were great to let me do what I needed to do and very supportive along the way. And the Metal Club out in San Francisco, which was the first major renovation that I did. And that's Mackenzie's first golf course in America. So that's a pretty special place. And, you know, it's a place that I go back to every year and, you know, keep them up to date and answer questions and things like that too, which is nice.
When you're going to do a restoration, you're making a bid. So you get in front of the members. Casey Stengel said, you got 25 guys on the team. 8 of them love you. 8 of them hate you. The other 8 aren't sure about it. So you got to keep each group apart. So you got guys over here that, what, nothing changed. How do you handle that?
Well, first of all, it's education. You got to educate your committee. So if you're the guy hired, you have to tell them about their golf course, even though they've been there maybe a very long time, maybe 40, 50 years, they don't really understand golf architecture in the broader spectrum. They think about it in how they play the game. And so that's a challenge, but that's all part of the process. And they also impart knowledge to the designer and what's important to them, what they see in the golf course. And you utilize all of that knowledge to give the best product that you possibly can. And that's, there's a lot of back and forth, give and take that you have to do to make that work.
We're talking to Mike DeVries, and I believe it was August 1st that he first jumped on a bulldozer on the property at Bloomfield Hills Country Club on the first hole. When we come back, we'll ask him when he gets a project to restore a 120-year-old course, famous. Let's walk through that process and how he begins. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crisula. We're with Mike DeVries. Mike, the members at Bloomfield say, give it a go. How do you start? Walk us through it.
Well, the process, we're in construction now, but the process really started about 3 years ago when they interviewed various architects. So I had a number of sort of interviews with the large committee. That's pretty typical. They try and, you know, find the right fit for what they're thinking they want to do and what that person is bringing to the table. My partner, Frank Pont, who lives in the Netherlands, is the premier cult historian restoration expert in the world. He's worked on probably 25 or 30 cult courses in the Europe and the UK. And so that was also part of looking at. Bloomfield had called me directly because I'm, you know, a Michigan guy, and they'd heard some references. But I brought Frank into that process too, and Frank really helped to educate the membership. And he gave presentations about about Harry Colt, so people could understand that, and being a solo Colt design, Bloomfield Hills is in a really unique position in America because Colt and Allison, who was his partner, typically referred to as Colt and Allison golf courses, all the other courses in the United States, besides Bloomfield Hills and Old Elm in Chicago, which is was designed by Colt but executed by Ross, which is that's very unusual and very unique. All of the other courses are by Charles Allison. So Bloomfield is a very special entity, being this really unique, special place that Colt did, and he could arguably be the GOAT also. He actually brought McKenzie under his wing and taught him. So he's done a lot of phenomenal work. And so you start by educating the membership, either through presentations, through the interview process, what you bring to the table. And then that corresponds into typically a long-range plan that talks about what the golf course has, where it's been. So it gives a history. It gives an understanding of what's important about the golf course and how do we preserve that? How do we restore that? How do we renovate that if something's been changed? And sometimes, you know, that is due to a road coming through the property or some other infrastructure. And how do we best represent what the maximum enjoyment that property can give the membership and the future generations.
Harry Colt was not Howard Cosell. I think one time they asked Harry Colt, what's your greatest golf course? I think his quote was, my least bad golf course is Swinley Forest. tell us a little more about Harry Colt.
Well, he was a very private man, actually. And there's only like three photographs of him. So, you know, he was not out there promoting himself. That's certainly for sure. But he was the first golf course designer that really used the term golf course architect, because he actually used a drawing board and he drew things to scale. And that doesn't mean that they got executed exactly that way in the field, but he did start out with a plan that was drawn to scale, and he did influence a lot of other architects, McKenzie, his other junior partners, Charles Allison and Morrison, who came on after McKenzie was there, and his body of work is really, really strong. So if you're in the London area, the great courses there, a lot of them were done by Harry Colt. And they're really, really solid as far as their design strategy. They're fun to play. He also worked with some other maybe lesser known architects, J.F. Abercrombie, who didn't do many courses, but the Addington Golf Course, which is in the south side of London, close to the center of the city, is a very interesting property, and Colt sort of assisted him on that. Colt also influenced the design of Pine Valley. He helped Mr. Crump with the main routing of the golf course, even though there were a lot of other architects, Tillinghast and George Thomas and others back then. That also sort of, it was a very cooperative, I guess in the early 1900s, it was a very cooperative type of profession. And if you knew another architect and you were coming through town, you might call him up and you may be working on a project and you'd go visit and you might critique a little bit for him or something like that. So there was a lot of that going on. And I think Colt having done, you know, primarily Sunningdale, Old, Wentworth, Swinley Forest that we've already mentioned, and a number of other courses around London, was kind of sort of the dean of architects and really influenced a lot of those guys and what they looked at.
We're talking to Mike DeVries. If you want to learn more, www.DeVries, DeVries, designs with an S.com. All right, it's been almost 2 months since we started moving dirt. you're on that bulldozer. You're on that bulldozer at 7 a.m. in the morning. And other than going to the toilet, a quick lunch, you're on it till 7 o'clock, 7 days a week. Mike, why?
It's fun. It's my Taka toys. They're just a little bit bigger now. It's a bit unusual. Most architects don't do that, but I've been on equipment my whole life, growing up working on the grounds crew at Crystal Downs, and then getting into that, working with Tom Doak and being on equipment and building stuff. Tom taught me how to run a bulldozer 32 years ago, and 32 years later, it's still the most fun thing to do, is to build and create and sculpt earth with that, to create a playing environment that is something that people get, you know, a high level of satisfaction from. So, and there are a lot of good shapers out there, but there's a lot of things in the dirt that happen in the process of actually building or shaping a green or a bunker or something like that. And that's hard to explain, and that's hard to interpret. It's just something that you feel, whether that's from the balance of the machine and how it's moving, the experience of this or that, or what you're running into, and the vision of how you see that. And so to me, that's the most fun thing to do. And you know, it's not just me out there. There's 40 or 50 other guys out there with irrigation and a construction crew that's, you know, they're moving dirt or lifting sod and putting sod down and helping out. And so it's a big effort, but that it's like a family that's building all that stuff and doing all that. And that's, there's a lot of satisfaction in that.
And personally watching and observing it, that entire family of 50 people is doing a phenomenal job. And they're out there 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're talking to Mike DeVries. When we come back, we'll ask him about the rhythm and flow of a golf course. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Rasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible. Anything is possible. 15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Mike DeVries, the best golf course architect you probably have never heard of. Currently renovating Bloomfield Hills Country Club. Mike, you talk about the rhythm and flow of a golf course. Please.
Well, think about if you take a hike, and you know, you, if you're a big hiker, you might climb mountains, right? If you're, you know, an average hiker, you might do some hills. And if you're just an everyday hiker, you might seek out something in the park, right? Something a little more sedate. Golf is really a hike with a game along played with it. So we have to think about how the flow of that golf course is. So you have 18 different holes. You have a tee, a fairway, a green for each of the holes. So you have sort of a sequence of shots and a routing or a routing, however you want to say it, of how those holes are laid out in the landscape. And if you you have a separation between each of those, when you finish the first green, you go to the second tee. Well, is that a short walk? Is that a long walk? Is it you know, a steep climb, or is it sort of on the same level? So part of the rhythm and flow of golf is trying to figure out what the best routing is for the most human scale sort of interaction with that. And if you have a, you can have a strenuous hike, but it can be connected and you can feel like different stages of that hike. Think of golf that way. You could have a, hilly golf course, but if the greens and tees are close together, there might be a good rhythm to it where it might be, more arduous, more strenuous to play, but you might feel really connected, and that might impart some special character to the actual golf course versus just a flat farm field that's laid out and, you know, there's not a lot of difference in elevation. You might go quickly from one to the other, but it also might not have anything very distinctive. So we're trying to find a balance between great golf and exciting holes and how that flows from one hole to the next.
We're talking to Mike DeVries, who designed Cape Wickham in Australia. It opened in 2015. Golf Digest ranks it as the 21st best golf course on the planet. That's tall cotton. That's tall cotton. Okay, not counting courses you've worked on, what's the most amazing course in America, Mike?
Well, there's lots of great ones. Sentimentally, I would always say Crystal Downs because I grew up there, and it is a great golf course. But I always like to point people in another direction. There's a course in north central Wisconsin called Lawsonia, and there's two courses there. But the Lynx course at Lawsonia, which was built during the Depression, it was designed by William Langford and Theodore Moreau, who were Chicago-based Midwestern architects. And they did a lot of really, really good stuff. And this was on an old monastery that had a big dairy component to its farm. And so there's some beautiful dairy buildings and part of the golf course. There's really nice undulation to the property. And there's some very, very bold features. And it's so exciting. The first time that I was there, I was in the middle of the third fairway and my heart was beating so hard, I couldn't actually pull the club back. It was that exciting. I had to step away from the ball. So, and that happened again on the fourth tee. So it's and I see a lot of golf courses. That's pretty thrilling when you have something like that.
Many people believe that golf is the greatest game ever invented. Why so?
Well, it's the hardest thing to do. No one's tackling you. No one's making noise. The ball's stationary. But to execute it and to do it really, really well, even for the best players, is difficult to do all the time. Ben Hogan, one of the greatest strikers of the ball, he said he might have three perfect shots around. So, you know, this is a guy that tamed the monster. So, you know, 1950 down at 51 down at Oakland Hills. So I think, you know, it's very difficult, but that's one of the charms too, is that you're always trying to get better. There's always room for improvement.
Mike, me personally, I have one perfect shot every time my Cubs win the World Series. All right. We were having coffee a couple weeks ago, and you made a statement, I quote, "Jack Nicklaus was the smartest golfer ever." Why?
Well, he was a great executioner of the ball, too, but he was the smartest tactician, I think, out there. He knew how to manage his game and how to play not only the golf course, but his opponents also. Jack, he knew how to play conservatively or aggressively. He could he was able to execute shots better than anybody. That's why he was, you know, the greatest. But also, he knew how to manage that. He knew how to win when he didn't have his A game that day. And other guys, you know, they usually, you know, it's very challenging. The pros are, they're all so good. And you've got to really be on to win. But Jack won a lot of times when he wasn't playing perfect. But that's because he knew how to work his way around the golf course and how to execute and play his opponents. I think they also knew how great he was, and there was a little bit of fear there too. You know, when the Golden Bear made a charge, you kind of took notice and maybe weren't quite up to the task. So that might be part of it too.
We've got 1 minute left. For any young person listening tonight that's got a dream to do something great, unique, like you have, what advice would you give to that young listener?
You got to follow that dream. You got to follow that passion. You've got to try it. You've got to seek that out. Personally, that's something that I think you want to do to fulfill yourself. If you don't try it, you're always going to wonder, well, what if? You can't say what if. You got to go for it, I think. And I'm really lucky. I'm able to do what I love to do. I found that. Found golf early on in life and, you know, came back to it, and here I am. I'm still on the bulldozer, still loving it.
Mike DeVries, I look forward to June 1st, 2021, to hit that ball on that first tee, miss those three traps off in the middle there, and be thrilled by how you've restored it. Thanks a million. Keep up the great, great work.
Thanks, Jack. It's been a lot of fun. Appreciate it.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Let's go home.